Hello everyone, and welcome to the Blessings of Grace. It's going to be a lovely day. It's already a nice day as far as weather is concerned, and we're going to make it really nice in our hearts and in our lives. So let's just, I'm a little, Nancy, are you here?
I am. Hi everybody. Hi Glenda.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I was looking. Yeah, I can hear you fine. I just couldn't find you on the board, but that's okay. We'll make that work any way we can. So, hello everyone, and today we've got some really good material to cover in our study, and an opportunity for loving fellowship from everyone who attends. So we, I think everybody's pretty much getting grooved in to the fact that we have our study time first, and then we have our blessing around 4 o'clock. So, convene according to your interest. And I love this format personally, and I've had lots of feedback from our community saying they love it as well. But I want to also remind you that the best way to ask for a specific blessing is to write me. Ask a blessing at christblessing.org. I'll repeat that. Ask a blessing at christblessing.org. And just let me know what your specific needs are. But actually, he's going to bless you anyway. You can't hold back the blessings. And your blessings are kind of like one of those seeker rockets that will find out where you need a blessing the most and find it. And then you add to that your prayers, which you will be praying during the receiving of the blessing. So, there are lots of ways that you can attract exactly what you need. And it's totally good and important for you to do that. Actually, Yeshua reminded his apostles more than once to ask. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door will be opened. Now, why do you think that would be? Let's just examine that proposition for a moment. Well, God has given us free will. And that includes free will to sit in whatever condition we might find ourselves. We might just be saying, well, I'll work my way through it, and that's the way I want to go. Is he going to come in and meddle with it? No, he's not. You ask, and you'll get help. Also, there's another reason, is that like any parent, God has set you into the world to have experiences that give you an opportunity to take under your belt, for good, bad, or neutral, examining up close in front, right in your face, what life is all about. He won't take those from you until you scream, uncle. Okay, I can't do this myself. Oh, Father, oh, Lord, please help me. So you do need to ask. The other thing also is that asking conveys respect. It conveys respect both ways. One is that you are too respected to be intervened upon without asking. I would guess that just about everybody in this community, I can't speak for other parts of the world because I don't know what their cultures are like. Well, in some cases I do, but I know in our culture, we have a slow, weaning process between parents and children, unless something extraordinary and traumatic has come in to affect the process. And we will have some watchful eyes looking over us all the way through our teenage years. And there are times when we've said back to mom or dad, hey, let me handle this, okay? Can I make some choices for myself, please? Those may not have been your words, but the spirit of a teenager pushing back on parental excessive supervision. Hey, can I have some freedom to make my own choices, Mom? Okay, don't you trust me yet? Things like that. Well, God is a parent, and he has the same feelings. And when you actually ask for his help, it thrills him. It actually thrills him that you look to him for help. So, yes, ask. Please, ask. And he listens. Now, will he do exactly what you ask? Maybe not, because he may have a better solution. But he will address the situation you asked about. He won't just slide over to something else and say, no, you just need to go to Sunday school more often. No, he's not going to do that. He will not avert upon your question. He just may have a different solution. And he may ask you to be patient because he's got to line some things up for you in order to deliver the results you need. So in turn, once you have asked, once you have received, let go of it. That's really the best thing to do because it's in his hands then. And his hands are good hands to be in. I can attest to countless miracles in my life. And small events, I wouldn't even call a miracle at the time they happened. And yet the consequences of them was like parting the sea. So the Israelites could pass through it. You know, we don't realize always the magnitude of his blessing when it happens in subtle ways. Because it happens in order to open up more possibilities for your life that could then bring you back to the table of expediting the growth and the change that's needed. Because he wants you to be in charge of your life. He wants you to learn from circumstances. He wants you to be the best you can be. And he does not want you to be in bondage type dependence on him. He wants a relationship with you. When you get that, you'll get rid of some of your parental defensive tendencies, like, I'm not going to ask Dad's help on that because he'll rub it in for me for years. He'll never let me forget about that. He'll never let me forget that I couldn't do it by myself. That's not going to happen. And that's not the way your Heavenly Father is. He doesn't want your dependency. He wants your relationship. And so as soon as you can walk on your own two legs, he'll, in fact, just say, get on with it now. And as a matter of fact, the two most common follow-ups, Yeshua had to all of his recorded miracles was, number one, your faith made you whole. And that he did not say, my faith in you made you whole. He said, your faith made you whole. And he didn't also say, your faith in me made you whole. In other words, your faith in you made you whole.
Mm.
You get that? And you'll understand that he didn't do that to create a dependency. In fact, I really believe from circumstances revealed, the few people he did not choose to heal or offer a miracle to were exactly the type of people who were looking for a codependent relationship, not someone they could lean on and draw power from, and not gain the indigenous personal power to be self-governing. Okay, now second, after the faith thing, the affirmation of faith, was that he would give assignments to somebody. He would say, no, now go tell your brother he's forgiven, or now go do, now don't sin anymore, or now don't do this, or do this. He would put a person on the path of assignments. He would push the person away from him and into his own life. So he wanted a relationship. When you really, really get that, you will never be hesitant about asking again. And then you will know what to do with what you get in order to get more. So ask. And you don't have to ask me. I'm just here as a convenience to forward your asking onto him. You can ask him in prayer, God in prayer. You can just put the thoughts out to the Holy Spirit. Or just be with the thoughts inside yourself and have the faith that this will be done. And there's power in that, my friends. A great deal of power in that. So, that being said, we're going to get ready for our blessing with a lesson today. Before we do, though, Nancy, I want you to take Stormy's call, because Stormy, I'm sorry, we didn't get back to you last time. We had such a tight closing at the end, and you weren't online anymore. So let's open the line so Stormy can have a few words with us.
That's perfect. I'm opening your line, Stormy. Can you hear us? Welcome.
Yes. And always, you know me, Glenda. I am very patient. If we don't get to me, that's okay. You know that's all right. So I'll say something beautiful here. I see your way. I hear your light. I know of your truth as I know my own. My spirit glows. My spirit grows.
How beautiful. Thank you, Stormy. I'm so glad I brought you on the call early. That sets a great tone for what we're going to study today.
And, of course, that's music to a musician's ear, setting the tone.
Yes, it is. It certainly
all right.
is. Well, I know you're going to love our message today. And I will read. Yeah, did you want to say something else?
Oh, no, no. I really enjoy hearing the message over and over and over again.
Oh, great.
Thank
That's
you.
Good.
We're glad you're here, Stormy.
All
Thank
right,
you.
My dear. Well, we will move into our study lesson today. It's In Love Without End, which is the book we're studying right now. You will find it written on pages 73 through 74 in the fourth chapter of the book, Love is Who You Are. This might seem like one of the easiest chapters to understand, especially considering how new and innovative the thinking is in some of the others, such as Jesus on science or the adamantine particles or God in reality, we can be deeply engaged with the mechanics of the universe in many of his messages to me. And we would think this would be just simple as pumpkin pie. Oh, and I wish you a happy pumpkin pie in the following week at Thanksgiving. But getting back to our lesson, it's going to cover one of the, I would say, the most frequent questions I have been asked through the years. You would think it would be something like, well, what are adamantine particles? No. The most frequent question is, what does it mean that I am love? I don't get it. Well, just with me having an ad lib response to that query, I think it really traces back to the fact that we have not cultivated our self-esteem. So when someone tells us that, we're shocked. And we're thinking, you're talking to the wrong person. or maybe you should be writing poetry, okay? But can we just get on to what the subject of love is all about? You know, love is the opposite of hate. Oh, my goodness, my friends, how wrong we have had it. How much we have not understood love. Amazing that we have as much of it as we do. But considering that God is love and he created all of the universe from love, we can't miss it. It's just most of the time we don't see it. And 90% of the time we don't know where to look for it. So let's just dive into this chapter, and we're going to take different passages from this chapter over the course of the next week or two or three, as long as it takes till I have a feeling of satisfaction that we've really gotten the message across. But we're going to start with something simple today, and it's not too long. It all started when I asked him, what does it mean to be created in the image of God? These are his words. It means that you are a child of the Creator, not a created thing. There's a very big difference, okay? You are a child of the Creator, not a created thing, okay? He created the mountain. He breathed and created you. The mystery of the Creator is beyond any knowledge that can be projected into form or image. However, the knowable aspect of your holy source is love. That love extends throughout creation. Humanity has a very special place in that creation, where it has been given the privilege of recognizing itself as love also, and of activating that power for further creation. This does not mean that the Creator has been diffracted into an infinity of little gods. There is but one God, which provides an enduring unity to all that is. What it means to be created in the image of God is that holy will pours through all mankind, generation after generation, by way of a common essence. That essence is love. Just think about that for a moment, and let's look at how that completely summarizes the whole two commandments he left us before he departed to higher ground. To love God with all your heart. Well, of course, if that's our very source of love, all our heart, mind, and soul. Yes, of course. And to love one another as yourself. Well, of course, if our one common essence is love. So those two commandments are really two separate doorways into the same room, all about the same thing, getting there into different pathways. And then discovering, when you get there, that we were created out of the same thing. And therein is the whole basis of empathy and shared living. But continuing on with what Yeshua said, an instructive analogy, which you might consider, is the role of DNA in your own body as a language base for the body's integrated performance. You could take tissue samples from different parts of your body, and DNA analysis would identify them all as being uniquely yours. However, not one of these tissue samples is equal to the whole body, nor could any one of them function alone. Yet the fact of a common DNA code allows all facets of the body to cohere and to work together in a coordinated fashion. You might say that there is a common encoding of DNA as love that you share with your heavenly creator, which allows you to act in coordinated service to the source of life as well as to all the manifestations of it. Love is the imprint of your beingness. In knowing that, you will understand why lesser actions fall short. But more importantly, you will begin unfolding that special nature which you were really created to be. Think not of love as an action, however, nor as a magnitude of effectiveness. If you compared yourself to the Creator in magnitude, you would collapse into helpless despair. Love is not a quantity, but a quality of beingness that brings forth rightness of action. Love is a quality, unbounded by senses and magnitudes, which derives its power from God, the ultimate source of love. As such, love has some inalienable rights. First of all, you have the simple right to honor within yourself that love has brought you and to assimilate those things into your character. For your character is the summarization of your love. No one can ever take that from you. Love is universally free. Thus, in being love, so are you. Your body may be imprisoned, but your love has no boundaries. Love commands the adamantine particles. Thus, in being love, you take command of your life. Love is the master of conditions. not the servant of them. Thus, in being love, you are no man's slave. Love is the law, and any law is only as valid as it is rooted in love. By this, all men shall know the law and be equal under it. This is why I left you with only two commandments, to love God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. Love is universally resonant with all of life. And in being love, you are also resonant with life. There are no conditions to the truth of who you are. It is your sacred right to be the love that you are. And that is unconditional. That's the end of our quote for today. And I hope you see the gentle irony of this coming back around to connect with what we studied the last 2 weeks about our rights and freedoms, which were all founded in love. Without love, we are not free. We are bound by reciprocity and all the other laws of the physical universe, the law of gravity. Yeshua could walk on water. How did he do that? With his love. I would presume his love of water, as well as knowing what it was composed of, his love of all creation and everything in the water. I have no idea. The vastness of his love is too great for my mind to conceive or express. But he did walk on water. He raised the dead, including himself. It was all love by which he did these things. And it is by love that we receive his blessing and his miracles. And I have always given you so much open birth to ask for blessings for those you love, because your love and their love of you will magnify the blessing so much. It's all about love, my friends. And what we generally misconceive about this statement is we think that we have to prove our love by first doing love. It's just the opposite. By being love, you will do more love. That's the way it really works. Have you ever just looked at how loving a baby can be? They just reach for you and want to hold your finger, and they want to touch your face, and they look at you, and you're just bowled over with the love they're sending you. And they don't intend to be doing anything. They're just being love with you. They're in love with you. And sometimes in marriage counseling, people have asked me, well, Glenda, what's the difference between loving and being in love? And for me, it's a very easy answer once you know this. It's like the baby that does nothing and yet you feel an eternity of love from that child. Well, it's being love without trying, love without doing anything, love that is unmistakable without having to say it, without having to express it, without having to ask for it, and mutually returned by the other person. This is where two people are actually mated in love. There are different levels on which we can be mated and married. obviously, and we as humans know what all of that we can do, the checklist on all of those. But think about this. Are you mated in love? I know a few couples who are, and it's just beautiful to be around them. So, such a blessing to be around them. They are really, truly mated. And frequently we talk about soulmates. But sometimes when I hear people talking about that, I almost get the feeling they're talking about something more metaphysical than anything else. Like, we were once married and now we've reconnected. Okay, great. Glad you reconnected. Are you still in love? That would be what my heart is thinking. You know, are you in love? If you're in love, then any time you reconnect is going to be a festival. It's going to be a celebration. It's going to be a bursting of the heart. It just will. And we're going to talk about how once we understand this, we can actually find the Sacred Heart. The Sacred Heart is that place inside you, created by God, to activate the spirit of love that you are. And that precedes all the love you do. It precedes all the love you will ever feel. And it tells you where to be in order to really gain the love you need. Have you ever been directed by serendipity to just discover a friend or a healer or a benefactor in some way, or the right employer, the right employee, the right partner for whatever you're doing? And you really didn't know where to, but you followed this spirit of instinct because you knew what you wanted to feel like when you met that person. And so you were just automatically steered away from things that were not it. And you were guided toward those it situations or persons that were it. That's your heart at work. And that's the spirit of love inside you, guiding you to your best and truest connections. Your best and truest connections in life come from the love that you are. This includes the work that you do in life. Wouldn't you want to have the kind of work you would never retire from, even though there might come a time when you will need more help with it, or maybe you'll just be an advisor in it, or just be a loving presence in it, a consultant, someone who blesses the continuity because now it's someone else doing the work. But wouldn't you want to turn it over to someone whose love matches yours? So it's like a ringing of two notes that synchronize to each other. So even though you're not able to do the physical work anymore, you never really retired, and you never will. And when you pass on to higher ground, you'll still be there, and they'll call upon you as they need you. This is what I feel so often about my dear and beloved friends that transition upward. And I'll be out in the night looking at the stars, and I'll say, "Hey, Tony, are you there? Tell me what's going on here." And I won't hear it with words, but I'll hear thoughts that will tell me, "Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I kind of thought so. That's what I felt." You know, and this happens to me so often when I'm writing or taking something from the Bible, I will ask Dr. Applegate, who advised me on Love Without End and writing it. I'll say, Dr. Bob, is this the right translation? And next day, I'll run across somewhere online, or I'll run across, you know, maybe a book that's just a better translation of Aramaic, and I'll get my answer. He's there. We connect to each other forever through our love. And later on in our discussions, Yeshua and I ask him, well, what happens? Where do we go after we lose our physical body? And he said, you go with your love. You go where your love takes you. It will take you to those who loved you, whom you loved. And that's what makes your heaven for you. It's love. It's not a place. This is what I was trying to tell the apostles. And I didn't mean in any way to discourage them that there would be a special place for them. But the most special place you can be is with those you love and those who love you. And from that, you create your surroundings. You create your opportunities. And you make your decisions about what you want to do next together. And some of you will decide to serve, to continue serving on high ground. Some of you just cannot wait to come back and be here serving the beauty of this great planet and learning, having learned from your experiences in your previous life, what the earth needs, what humanity needs, and how you can do it better. How you can. I hope this doesn't offend anyone with sensitivities that might be a little too metaphysical, but I'm going to say it anyway, because, you know, I have taken a lot of risk in presenting some of the things I think to you. One of the comments that was, there's so many comments on both sides after the election, and I do not want to get into that because I don't take sides. I just want us to be happy and for us to do what makes us happy. But I couldn't help but be amused by one of the comments that the Gen Z population was swinging very conservatively, very, very, very conservatively, way against expectations because they were born into high tech, new tech, with their future practically being prescribed through tech. And they were the most conservative thinkers. And I started laughing inside my soul because I know who most of those Gen Zers are. They were the ones that were my parents, the generation that was called the Great Generation, the ones that went through World War I, the Great Depression, World War II, had their families and then moved on to high ground. They knew what it took to survive in a very practical, pragmatic sort of way. And the handwriting on the wall was so clear. I just kept laughing to myself. I thought, oh, this is the most unpredictable thing in the world that any analyst could survey and think about. But I got the message instantly. These were people who went through very hard times, and they were prepared to come back and help us as humanity go through very hard times again successfully. They were prepared to bite the bullet. They were prepared to do whatever was necessary. And it wasn't just one side or the other they voted on, but their votes were very hardcore practical. And that surprised almost everybody except for me. I just wanted to give you that as an illustration of what I'm talking about. A lot of us really do come back because we want to take what we learned from our previous time around and put it into service for the next time around. And a lot of you will do the same. I have no idea what I will choose to do because I'm inscribed by the one who gives a lot of orders to teachers, and I have no idea what he will expect of me next. But if I were left on my own just to choose from the life I lived before he called me forth in life, I would be back here in a flash because I am a lover of nature, a lover of animals and wildlife and conservation. And I would be coming back to help our planet survive. So that's what I would have been doing had it been the first stage of me that was getting to decide. But I have a feeling he's got some other plans for me, and I'll go with him. But the point I want to make of this is whatever your love is where you will go in this life. If you want to navigate your ship of life better, trust your love. Your love will know where to go because your love won't betray you. And that's a big statement I just made, and I want to clarify it because there are people who told us they loved us and then they betrayed us. Don't learn from that. There are people in the family of humanity who will lie about anything. Literally, they will lie about anything. And there are people who have manipulated by pretending to love you, pretending to shower you with favors of grace. And then when you need them the most, they're gone. And you feel as if love betrayed you. You couldn't trust love anymore. It had clay feet. Well, some people have clay feet, but they're going to learn the hard way lessons about betrayal of love. And I wouldn't want to be in their shoes when they start learning. Because love, in its pure essence, my friends, does not betray. Love is solid, reliable, faithful. It never stops hoping for your best. It never stops in its charity toward you because love knows there's infinite abundance and it does not believe in scarcity. And when love comes to you, it knows that it's come home because you were created of love, and you will know what to do with it. Just be honest in your love, my friends. Be honest in every way, and don't feel that you have to show love that isn't really there. If there's something or someone you feel, let's say, very charitable towards, you really hope the best for them, but in your heart of hearts, you can't say you really love them. Well, don't pretend you do. Just wish them all the best. Keep sending positive vibes their way. And go be with someone you love who loves you. Make the love connection. That's how you exponentially evolve and prosper your life, expand your life. And you become everything you can be. When you love the love that loves you, you can't stop it. It will grow exponentially. And sometimes you might be surprised. You might be surprised who turns around and actually loves you that you thought hated you. Because the hatred came from a conflict of conditions and not from inside the two persons. I would wager a bet, my friends, that down the line, give it a few years or as long as it takes, Trump and Biden will actually respect each other. They will have intense respect for each other because they both were true to what they believed. They were both true to what they held in place. And they will actually respect that. I believe that will happen. And we've seen it frequently in the history of humanity, where people who were enemies because of conditions became the best of allies through eventual understanding and respect. And Yeshua told us to love our enemies because actually it's going to bring up something better in you than you ever knew you could be. And you may just discover that the only thing about your enemy that ever hated you was a conflict of conditions, not a conflict of persons. If we could just get past all this conflict of conditions, we might actually become a brotherhood, a family, a sisterhood, a united union with God on this earth. In my opinion, that's worth living for. That's worth dying for. And that's why I don't get embroiled in conflicts of conditions, because they're just conditions. You want to find unconditional love? Well, you got to get outside the conditions. There will always be conditions. And conditions will always conflict with something or someone. If you get outside of conditions, then you're at a point where you can be the love that you are, they can be the love that they are, and you can discover something actually amazing about each other. I think I'll leave it at that. But I will open it now, since we've got about 10 minutes left for you to make comments about this. If you want to ask questions, we're open for questions. Let's get this subject down right now, because, you know, it was the first thing Yeshua ever said to me. Love is who you are. That way, I would consider it a top priority. A top priority in this book. So let's discuss it, or let's just at least be here with it, okay?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, what do you think, Nancy?
Well, you're right. It's key. I mean, knowing that that's why he came to restore our knowledge of this love that we are. I mean, and just restore the relationship with our Father. So I think it's a pretty important thing to understand. You know, but it's really cool to think of it. Yeah, but it's so wonderful to think about, gosh, if I want to define myself or think of myself in the best possible ways, I was just sitting here thinking, I'm love. I'm a child of God. You know, love is a power, so I'm powerful. Love is unconditional. I'm not a product of circumstance. You know, it's just like, the list goes on and on to kind of help you realize it's so transcendent to everything that faces you. It doesn't mean that you're going to not trip up or absolutely ask for that help, because we're human.
And, we're living in a junkyard of conditions.
Right,
so,
but love isn't
so
attached to circumstance.
Yeah.
And I love, I always tell everybody we always read Beloved on Christmas morning, but, you know, go back and read that about the paradox side of love and miracles. It's like, that's so cool, you know, that when you get into that place and that knowledge, you know, and giving your all, you know, you receive and releasing everything's attained and forgiving all is forgiven. All of those things, it is true. When we are not being the love that we are, every other action falls short. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago, you were like, you know, don't sell out. You said something like that. It's like, you gotta courageous.
Well, we're gonna be inside our conditions, Nancy. And there are some of us, myself included, that I just don't choose that pathway. I don't choose to be inside those conditions because I know they're gonna pass. As in, this too shall pass. All conditions eventually die. They eventually pass. And we move on and pick up some new ones. But like I said, this whole world is a junk pile of conditions. And we can either immerse ourselves in them and believe they're important, or we can rise above them. And
that's,
I'm writing a book right now about that very subject. So... The whole year I've been writing that. Yeah, the whole year I've been writing that book. We have had some of the worst conditions thrown at us to fight over, and so many pressures on me. Well, Linda, you gotta take sides. No, I don't. I really don't have to take sides because I want to be here as God directs me to serve. And our Creator, the heavenly host, and Yeshua, don't take sides. They don't.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, yeah. Well, they take sides against sin, but not the sinner. There's a difference.
Right. Right. Well, we've got some callers. I'm going to go ahead and open Caroline first. Hi, Caroline.
Okay,
we're glad you're here.
Hi. Can you hear me okay, or do I need to get off my headset?
No, we can hear you well today.
Hear you
this
fine.
Is good.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And it's so true. And I think people forget that polarization has been there since antiquity, you know, the whole us versus them thing. It made me think about Romeo and Juliet, you know, which was the love story between two. They were from two warring families, the Montagues and the Capulets. And, you know, when you read it as a, you know, when you're reading that Shakespeare thing, you think, oh, how ridiculous that these families were at war with each other and couldn't let their kids have relationships with each other. It seems ridiculous to us now, but then. If you fast forward to the way things are today, there's all this stuff. Well, how could you possibly, how can somebody who votes for the Democrats possibly want to be with somebody who votes Republican or the other way around? Or how could somebody who's pro-vax want to be with somebody who's anti-vax? And we've got all these schisms and polarized situations.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's those kinds of splits have been with us since antiquity. And one of the jobs we have is to, you know, not be judgmental. That's the hardest thing in this world. And that was one of the things that I really got out of reading Love Without End. It's not our place to judge. People who do bad things are going to be judged eventually. We don't have to do the judging. But we do have to, you know, forgive and love people and not just shun somebody because of what side of the fence they might be on. So I think it's such a timely thing to be talking about today, Glenda. I think that's amazing, really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he guides me towards what I need to be talking about. So you can thank him for that.
I think probably
for following his advice.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a few decades away from now, people will sort of look at this, the way people were warring against each other over these ideas and think, wow, that was really ridiculous. How could you have all that hatred and distrust when it was just holding everybody back, you know? So that's the problem. I have a blessing I want to ask for this time for myself. It's I've been having arthritis in my hand, and it actually has got a lot worse since I started playing pickleball. So it makes it very hard even to pick up a kettle, which is ridiculous. As a Brit, I always want to make my own tea and stuff. So, and that's something that's happened fairly recently. So I would love a blessing to get back to the way I was and have my fingers and my knuckles, especially my right hand is the big problem, to be working right. And it also made me think about you, Glenda, because I thought it was so sad. You've had problems with arthritis, and that's helped, that's been a problem in terms of painting. So you know, I mean, why not have a blessing for both of us together, for your hands to be healed so you can paint?
My hands have been blessed. I have no arthritis in my hands. Isn't that amazing? And I think that's, I have had, this will show you something really important, what we're talking about right now. I have had both hips replaced. But I would not go to just any physician. I was very careful who I allowed to do the replacement. And I was instantly attracted by love. She was marvelous, and I have not even so much as had an eighth of an inch difference in the two legs, or one past the time of physical therapy. Never a pain, never a stiffness. It's as if, you know, exactly what I needed was provided. Now, with regard to my hands have been the focus of so much love. Even though I had arthritis in other parts of my body, nothing has ever touched my hands.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So
because I heard,
has
and then
actually
it,
been, yeah, it's been a part
I heard
of the
that,
whole process.
I heard that you were having trouble painting because of arthritis. Is that still the case?
No, it was never true.
Oh, well, then I'm misunderstood.
Well, I don't paint. For the main reason is that I'm busy doing other things. First of all, after I painted The Lamb and the Lion and Yeshua, well, those were hard acts to follow, really. I did paint some landscapes from areas that I loved a lot in my life, and they were beautiful. And it was like, well, so what? I should be writing. I should be teaching. You know, I had more important things to go and do. And love took me somewhere else. So that's why I don't paint. But,
we're all really looking forward to Nowhere to Go But Up. That's going to be an amazing book.
You're going to have it for Christmas.
Wow.
If God is willing. I'm on the last chapter right now.
Wow, that would be great.
We'll ask for a blessing for that.
yes, let's have another blessing
you.
For that to be
yes,
ready
thank
for
you,
everybody.
Thank you. I accept that for sure. And now, about your hand, is it just one hand or both?
Well, my left hand is, I'm getting a little bit in some of the, in the index finger middle joint, but the right hand, I've just recently got stuff happening in the knuckles, which has really kind of made it painful picking up heavy weight, you know, like a full kettle. So that's really, and that's a fairly recent, the arthritis in the index finger joints of both hand. That's been going for maybe a year or so, a little bit longer. But the knuckle thing is fairly recent in the past few weeks, and I really want that to go away so I don't have impaired ability in that hand.
Of course. And then you might try turmeric.
I just ordered your oil.
Good.
I just ordered your oil. Yeah. I'm waiting for that to come, you know. So, I just ordered the oil a few days ago. So hopefully it'll come out to me.
It will reduce inflammation. And I can share something with our community about it that I need to put it in writing, but... it hasn't been top of my list for the last few days. I had a little problem in my neck, inflammation that occurred in my neck that was actually reducing circulation to my brain. and I was feeling a little bit of brain fog that kept me from writing, and I would just get sleepy as I was writing. And I thought, you know, I would hand massage or put ice on my neck, and nothing was quite enough. And I thought, okay, turmeric, that's what I'm doing. Well, I put turmeric on my neck, and it went up into my scalp, you know, above my hairline, because I wanted to take it all the way up to where it made a connection. It took the swelling down. It was gone. The problem was gone in 24 hours. I mean, really, it was gone. But I didn't skin test my scalp, and my scalp turned pink and a little itchy. Now, nothing bad happened. It's not like it bubbled up or scabbed or anything like that, but it got pink and itchy, and that's going away now. But my reminder is skin test. If you use it straight, skin test. And don't think because you skin tested on your arm that that's going to be the same as skin test on your neck, which is a different kind of skin. Do not put it on your eyes, okay, or your lips, because mucous membrane does not handle that kind of substance. And I didn't think I needed to skin test on my scalp, but I did, and I didn't do it. So I learned the hard way that I had to live with pink itchiness for a couple of days. So it's very potent. It's very potent. Skin test every part of your body you're going to use it on.
So you dilute it then, otherwise dilute it with some other oils. If you have some problems with skin, if you have skin irritation, you could just maybe dilute it with some other oil, like a jojoba oil, that kind of thing. Maybe.
Well,
what do you think?
Yes, definitely. Well, definitely dilute it in a carrier oil, but I would prefer you put it in some MCT oil.
MCT oil, yeah.
It's now available almost anywhere at a very fair price. The thing about MCT oil is all of the saturated fats have been removed, and it's saturated fat that keeps your body from absorbing essential oils. So if you really want absorption, you need MCT oil. Now, if you're using essential oils primarily for the aromatic, the aroma of the oil, the aromatic beauty of the oil, that's fine. You can use jojoba or any other carrier oil you like. That's fine because, in fact, those oils will help you keep it sitting on top of your skin so you can probably smell it longer. If you absorb an essential oil, it's not going to be quite as aromatic.
Okay, well, I look forward to the turmeric arriving here because, as I said, I just ordered it, so we'll see. You'll see my order.
When did you order it, Caroline?
A few days ago. There was a little issue because it put in the wrong address for my credit card, and I did write you an email about that. So hopefully it'll go through because it filled in the address for my shipping address, which is different to the billing address for the town and postcode, zip code. But I put in a correction, and hopefully that will not stop the thing going through, having the wrong zip code on the credit card. I'm sorry?
So you did it.
I did the fix. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and hopefully it will go through, because when I first filled it out and sent it off, I noticed that the zip code was wrong on the billing address. So I sent a correction email. But I'm looking forward to that, so I'm glad you've got that as a new product. That's fabulous.
It's really great. We're getting wonderful success stories on it, and I've had great success with it, and, you know, I got back to writing the next day.
Fabulous.
Well, thank you, Caroline.
So,
we're
thank
so
you.
Called. Yes.
All right.
And always asking and inspiring us to ask, because it's important, and so thank you. We love you, and I had Ken there, Glenda, but I've lost him. So, Ken, if you want to jump back on, we'd love to hear from you. We love you, Carolyn. I'm going to close your line and see if Ken is going to come here on board. Well,
oh, so,
I think There he is. Ken, I'm sorry. I apologize. Your line's open now. Hi, Ken. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, there we are. Yeah, I wasn't sure if we were going to have time for another caller for myself. So I, yeah, thank you so much for putting out just a very simple but yet incredibly elegant message, as I feel like you do every single week. And the thing that came to mind as you were speaking was probably a phrase that we all know and have heard many times is, I am that I am. And mm-hmm. when I look at myself that I am love, then I am what I am. And yet when I say that to people and when I say that to myself, it's all that there is, but there's something else that needs to be said. Because we all have our bad moments when we're not what we're not. And so when I think of that I am, I also have to say I'm not what I'm not. So I can immediately look at both of those phrases as being a complete sphere, a complete spectrum of that state of beingness. And the week before Halloween, I was introduced to an online conference, a free online conference on the topic of deliverance and dealing with, you know, what people would see as evil or malevolent spirits and all this kind of thing. And so I was completely blown away when I attended this thing. And it's been very present in my mind ever since then. And yet when I heard what you were saying today, I said, you know what? This whole idea of good, bad, evil, and all these other different things is a complete and total misnomer. It's a complete fallacy. I mean, yes, there are lots of things that we would consider being in the world of not being benevolent. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I think that your presentation of recognizing conditions, that's where it all lies. You know, we're all created in the same image. And so we have mm-hmm. to realize is that that particular little situation, okay, I'm still going to love it, but I'm just going to love it for it to be where it needs to be and not here. It needs to be over there.
Exactly.
And it just,
yeah.
It, and it's like, you know, you can love, you know, the pumpkin pie and the peach pie and the apple pie, but you may not really want to mix them all together.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and you know, the thing is, some souls are more immersed in conditions than other souls are. And some souls think their value in this life depends on how deeply and truly and vigilantly they will fight for the conditions they believe in that they're immersed in. And what they're fighting for are those doggone conditions. They're not really fighting for or even through the love that they are. They're fighting for conditions. And they're conditions set on top of other conditions, on top of still more conditions, and manipulated by unknown factors that nobody knows what the heck they are. And then the conditions go to war. All wars are fought between one condition conflicting another. Souls don't fight each other.
Yeah. And I think, and it's to realize that dynamic of either I'm in a condition or I'm not in a condition. And to realize is that who you are supersedes all of that. And from that position of superseding all of it, then you can say, I am what I am and I'm not what I'm not. And let that be kind of be the mantra, the meditation that then naturally unfolds to reveal all the stuff that you never even knew existed, but that was driving your life all the way along.
Exactly.
So
that's it. And when you discover that, you'll never get tricked again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until the next time.
Right. The next plane of intelligence, right? I think the other thing I wanted to say is, in response, I think Carolyn was talking about, you know, if we look back 100 years or 200 years ago, and why didn't we understand things, is that, you know, one of the things that I've kind of discovered, or at least realized, is that consciousness has many grand cycles. And so the state of consciousness in the world 100 years ago was fundamentally different than where it is today. And so, mm-hmm. you know, in some ways we're radically more advanced, and sometimes we could say we're radically more polarized. And so every moment in time is truly a new place for a new consciousness to emerge that has never existed before that. And so, as some people would say, history never repeats itself, but it rhymes. And so that there's a lot of similarities. And so to look back and said, oh, I should, you know, I can't believe that I did that 30 years ago. Well, 30 years ago, you were doing the best you could. Now you're doing the best you can, but you're in a different place.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
I think that's a great interpretation, Ken. You know, and that's the best we can do, is look at what's in front of us and decide what it means to us and how we're going to engage with it, and hopefully not too deeply immersed in the conditions that surround it, because it's awfully hard to pull out when you do, you know.
Yeah.
You step into quicksand thinking it's just like any other form of sand, and it's not. It pulls you back. You think you can pull out, and all of a sudden it's got your foot pulling you under. So that's the sticky side of conditions. And we think we can just dabble in them and pull out of them and rethink them. And sometimes we can't. We just have to go ahead and go through the process of discovering that it wasn't worth all the effort you put into it. It wasn't necessary, you know, to
make
a big deal out of nothing.
Yeah, and to be really grateful for it. Just to be grateful, as Yeshua told us, for all those times that love is flowering for us. And he said, you know, when you see that, however it shows up, wherever it shows up, see and notice the beloved. And that's so important, just to stop and realize that. And I think that's how we'll grow in our relationship with God, you know. There's that, like talking about the babies. Gosh, I feel really blessed I get to see that so much, because I've got these little ones all around them all the time.
Yeah.
And,
I know.
It's pretty wonderful. We had, you know, three of them running around today, and gosh, it's a gift. So I'm grateful. And thanks. I'm grateful to you, Ken. Thank you, and to Caroline, and to everybody who can't, Stormy, everybody who calls in, and everybody's here in spirit and in love. What a circle we're creating. And Glenda, just thank you every week, you know, bringing us these messages that he brought us so long ago, and reinforcing these grand truths so that we can create this beautiful.
And so let me throw in a quick blessing too. So for my beautiful housemate, Cindy and Brian, both of them are great people, but they're dealing with some physical issues that I would love to have them get some assistance on. And then also two good friends of mine, Maria and Jonathan. So now let's leave it at that.
Great. All right. They're on my list and
thank
in my
you.
Heart.
Bless you all.
All right, everybody. I think it's time that we just moved into another place of mind and heart to get ready for our blessing. All right. What we want to do now is, let's just start with a deep breath, okay? I don't know if anything in this presentation took your breath away or caused you to gasp and say, oh, my Lord, I can't believe she said that. But whatever happens, release it. Just let go. Just be with yourself and with God. The love that you are radiating in whatever conditions you are holding on to embracing, wanting to let go of, but don't know how, that you want to transform, have some special transformations in your life. Now is your time to let that happen. And we want to help you have that happening for you. So what we want you to do, take another really deep breath, hold it for a couple of seconds, and then blow it out, kind of like you were blowing out a vacuum cleaner. You're gonna put that dust somewhere else other than in your own self. You're putting it out. Let it go. And as you do, know that whatever you experience will benefit someone somewhere else. We all learn from one another. We all learn from each other's successes and hardships. We learn as we share one life of breath. We inhale and we exhale that awareness and that knowledge to one another. So now let's get moving, okay? We want to move energy through you. And you've got to move your body around just a little bit in order to get that energy flowing. I know some of you, I didn't realize this until recently, but there's some among us who stay pretty active as they're listening to me. They say it helps them to flow in and get rid of anything I say that they don't like. So you can be that person too. But here's where we want to go. We just want you to start by wiggling your toes, flexing your fingers, okay, and rolling your shoulders a little bit. Let's get some of that tension out of your shoulders. Move your neck to the right and then the left and then forward, bend forward just a little bit. And now raise your neck back. Okay. Stand if you can. Okay. And as you stand, if you're a little bit unstable, hold to something because I want you to move one leg forward just a little bit. You could still be standing on it, but stand on your heels so you can actually have that leg forward because that stretches the back of your leg, okay? Now, take the other one, move it forward, stretch the back of your leg, okay? And now flex one of your legs, like bend your knee or whatever other, your hip, some part of your leg. Get it moving. Hold on to something and create a little windmill, okay, a little circle with your leg, okay? And keep that going for a couple of seconds, first one and then the other. Now, I want you to do the same thing with your arms. Extend one arm and make a windmill of it, okay? And the other one, make a windmill of it. This actually helps draw in energy as well as moving it through your body. Now I want you to bend forward just a little bit and then bend back. Because that stretches your spine. And it will move energy through your spine into the ground, up through the top of your head. Okay, and now, again, rotate your shoulders to get that remaining stiffness out of them. Now, sit down. Find a comfortable chair. And you don't have to sit completely upright. I think it's more important to be comfortable. But I would like your feet on the floor or the ground in the direction of the earth, touching something. If they don't quite reach the floor, get a book and put it on a book. Have your feet touch something, because we want them to convey energy coming up from the earth. And do not have running shoes on or any other kind of shoe that's made of synthetic material. It's okay to have shoes on as long as it's natural material. It's okay to have socks on as long as it's natural material. And the same thing would go for your head. We want your head uncovered unless it's covered with natural fat fiber, such as cotton, wool, silk, linen. I guess bamboo would qualify also. We've got some interesting fabrics today that look and feel a little bit like synthetic fabrics, but they're actually quite natural. So just so it's natural, that's all that matters, because the energy that's going to be available to you is from the field of natural energy, not synthetic, and for the most part, not mineral, as in coming from intergalactic energy. It's going to be natural energy that is compatible with you. You're not going to be receiving some kind of strange energy. You're going to be receiving the kind of energy that gave you life in the beginning and sustained your life all the way through. But you're going to get a good dose of it. Okay. Now, let's begin our mindful breath. It's a little breath I taught you. Probably we've been doing this for over a year now. And it's just an ordinary breath, except you're going to space it and control it and have a little bit of mindful infusion into it. And you're going to count to four. So just imagine you're circling your breath around a box. Just like you've got a little box in front of you, and you're going to exhale on the left side of your box to the count of four. And it's your count of four, whatever, however slow or fast you want it to be. And then you're going to pause to the same count of four. Then you're going to inhale to the count of four. And you're going to pause again to the count of four. This is actually one of the oldest practiced breathing techniques that has ever been discovered in spiritual practice. It goes deep into many indigenous tribes of people, into the healing work, the celebration work, because it recognized the fact that it's the in-between, the pauses between breaths, where the miracle happens, where the healing happens, where the changes occur that you're looking for. It acknowledges that your life began with breath. And it shall end with breath. And in between the beginning and the end, you will have many pausing experiences that will give opportunity for change or transformation. And those are the positions where of wondrous possibility. The interesting thing about this breath that I find so useful is I can do it anytime. It doesn't put me in a trance. It doesn't put me in an altered state of any kind. In fact, it wakes me up. It makes me feel more alert, and because I'm not inhaling or exhaling vigorously,
I could do it in a board meeting. I could do it in a counseling meeting. I could do it driving my car and be better off for doing it. So really, I give this as a gift to you to practice any time in your life. In fact, I have found it's a great way to go to sleep because sleep is kind of a pause to your day. And by empowering the pauses, you empower that transition your mind makes from waking to sleeping consciousness. It's a great way to facilitate sleep. If you need a little break, a little restfulness, but don't have time for a nap in the afternoon, just reclining in your chair, close your eyes, and practice the four square breath, you can actually get back just about as much energy as you would get from a short nap. And it only takes a few minutes to do this. And you're not groggy after you do it. You're actually quite alert. So I want you to do this before and even during as you receive the blessing. But also, as you are receiving the blessing, I want you to be praying, asking for that which you want, letting it be known and heard. Now I will offer my prayer to Yeshua. And then we will begin the blessing. And you will begin your prayer and your breathing. Oh Lord, our brother, the presence of God among us, reminding us of the presence of God in each of us that has gone to sleep or allowed itself to be buried beneath the conditions of life. We thank you for coming and offering your life as a sacrifice for our rediscovery of self and who we are. We thank you for being with us through our joys and our troubles, our events of happiness and our suffering, for times when we are confused and for times when we thought we knew it all and we knew nothing. You helped us to redirect the course of our journey. And you made us to be high in our self-esteem as we did it. Because the one who really knows us has come to our assistance. We give you praise and honor, respect, and enduring love that you have loved us so richly, so eternally, asking nothing in return except for our company, our companionship on the journey back to God. I ask that you hear our prayers and requests of everyone for their blessing, and for the blessing of those they love, for the blessing of all those who pray around the world as we offer this blessing, for those who don't even know they can pray, who are lost spiritually. We ask for your peace among those who are warring or in a state of vigilance and conquest. Most of all, we ask your blessings for all the children, for they are love, and may they receive love in return, knowing at least you are loving them through it all. until their love, their own love, becomes the guiding force of their life. We ask that the hungry be fed and those without shelter be covered and rescued. We ask that you help us to be better family to each other, to love one another and forget about the conditions we're in that drive us so far away sometimes and so deeply into conflict. Forgive us. Please forgive us that we forgot who we were and that we thought we could improve on ourselves by being the conditions we are in. Help us to understand the futility of that and the glory of being who we were created to be. To all these things, we are grateful. We ask your blessing. And we thank you for being with us. In your holy name, we ask that our words be heard, our hearts be open, and received by God, our Creator. Amen. Blessing givers, will you join me now and convey the energy of the Holy Spirit into this blessing?
Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, you need to go and rest so that you can continue receiving it. Lay flat, horizontal, on a bed, or your sofa, or the floor, on a mat, and so forth. You pick your place, but be in a state of surrender and be blank, like the whiteboard God will write on. I leave you with my love and my wishes for a great blessing and a blessed week. Looking forward to being with you again next week. Bye-bye for now.